The other day, someone was talking about the attending a workshop on the art of dying. I was wanting to understand a bit more about it, but that conversation didn't happen. But this teaching is about dying today, not at some point in the future, because the art of dying is the art of letting go. The body is not concerned whether it will die or not. The ego, which is identified with the body, is afraid of death. The baby is not afraid of death. So, to prepare for dying is to prepare today. Dying today to my misperceptions. Dying today to all the blame, condemnation, hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance, guilt, and shame. So that if this is the way I live my life, who is there to die at the end of the lifespan? The body will go. So this is the death of psychological suffering and the birth of peace and harmony in daily living. This is the art of dying. This is the sadhana. This is the practice. It is not about when I grow old, after a few years, what will I do? Make my will, get the nurses organized. Those are the physical aspects. But am I prepared to die today? Which means, supposing I have a view about something, whatever it may be, am I willing to accept the fact that it is only my view? Someone else with a different conditioning may have a different view. Earlier, I thought my view was the right view for everyone. Now I know my view is the right view for myself. This understanding brings a sense of humility. I still have a view. I have to navigate through the waters of daily living. I have my set of conditioning, my belief systems. So I have a view. That is how I function in life. But I am no longer bound to it, and I am no longer binding others to my view, forcing them to accept that my view is the right view. So these small things in daily living, resentments built up over memories of the past, when these are let go of, that the hand of God was behind it all. When I look back, everyone was playing their role in the script of my life. Everyone came with their destiny, their conditioning, their nature. Everyone was a child, a baby, an innocent baby. We all came from that same dimension, that same space. And then through the act of divine hypnosis, as my teacher would say, the ego set in. At the age of 1.5 to 2, and I started perceiving myself separate from the world, and now it became a battle to survive. The ego employed all the tools to survive and dominate and control because it was afraid, without realizing that pure being, which was there since birth as the baby running around the house, is still there. Otherwise, you'd be dead. The being is still there, but the ego got overlaid with its sense of separation. This is me. This is me, and this is my story. And anything which threatens me and my story, I dislike. And I live my life in this ignorance till the last day on the planet. And then, by the grace of God, a spiritual journey can begin where an understanding seeps in. Who am I to dislike anyone? I may not get along with some people, so be it. You don't have to hug everyone, you don't have to love everyone. I may have my preferences as an individual, but when I accept people for the way they are, I have no desire to change them. I may wish inside me that, oh, I hope this person was more gracious, this person was more giving. But then I smile at myself because I realize they are playing out their destiny. Who am I to intervene and tell them you should be like that? That one who wants to tell others how they should be, that one has to die, because then it means we are playing God. And when I find I start living my day like this, I'm so much more lighter. My mind is no longer occupied with garbage, that constant churning. I find that I have something to learn from everyone, especially those who push my buttons. And then, because my mind is not consumed by all this separation, I find my day starts becoming lighter and joyful. When you start meeting people without the least interest in changing them, you start enjoying people the way God made them. Equal expressions of the divine. Compassion arises. Why is this person being nasty to me? Maybe they had a very troubled childhood. I don't know. A childhood full of hurt, abuse. I don't know everyone's backstory, whose path I cross. So rather than being too quick to judge, I may feel compassion arising. That for this person to use these kind of words, what they must have suffered. You see, the whole game changes. The whole dimension of living changes. This is the change in the consciousness. The transformation has to happen within, not dependent on an external circumstance or an external place. I may run to a place like Shirdi, be very thrilled with the darshan and come back, and my daily living is a mess. I get agitated, full of resentments, hatred. Was that a great darshan? Not to lay less emphasis on what happens at sacred places, but as the masters have said, the teaching has to be in the heart. Then you know that you have had proper darshan. Then you know there has been a transformation. When you start experiencing in daily living sukha shanti or sahaj sthiti, then you know that darshan has truly happened. Then there's nothing left after that. It's finished. Darshan is what? You could call it seeing God. Point is, can you see the invisible God that is behind the show, that is behind everyone's actions, everyone's words? Because we admit God is all-knowing, all-powerful, all-pervading, no greater power than God. If that is so, there is nothing apart from God. We would be hypocrites if we thought there was a power apart from God. Because on one hand, we are saying God is everything. You see, this is the whole Maya, how it is designed. Because we see objects separate from us. So then, I still have to protect myself, navigate through life. But I do it without the venom of doership, which is the foundation of the Gita. The ego deluded thinks I am the doer. When I accept nobody is the doer of actions, I still say what I have to say, do what I have to do. But the sting of doership is removed from the equation. That is the difference. I am no longer targeting individuals anymore with my weapons, no matter what they have done. Now my mind, my buddhi starts operating, because the eye of wisdom has opened up. Not the eyes of duality through which I have been viewing the whole show, but the eye of singularity. And so I find, by and by, rather than unconscious reactions based on the past, responses are emerging. Certain reactions will be biological reactions. But by and by, because my guns are not trained at individuals, I start responding. That is how I live my life, causing least trouble to others and to myself as well. There's a saying, human beings have a problem for every solution. We love making everything a problem. The ego loves it because it thrives on problems. this person said this. I really think there's something behind it. Loves this churn.
Very true.
He goes, it's amazing how many problems are self-created. And when you taste that peace, you really wish it for everyone. Inside your heart, you feel whoever you come across in the course of the day, family member, colleague, friend, stranger, in your heart you start feeling. Because when you've tasted that peace, you know it's a great thing that you would, from your heart, wish it for everyone. I really wish you be at peace from the bottom of my heart. Years back, I had met a very wonderful master called Dada Vaswani in Pune. I was with him, chatted with him for quite a while. And then in the end, I asked him, I said, could you sum up in one sentence the core of your message? And he said, the core is, wherever you are, whether you're traveling in a bus, car, going to someone's home, just send blessings to everyone. No matter who, just keep sending blessings. Blessings of what? That may you buy that car which you desire, or that Burberry shirt. Those kind of blessings. What would be the spontaneous blessing? Peace be with you. May peace be with you. I met someone who is immersed in the teachings of Islam recently. Wonderful man, physiotherapist. So we said, I said, when you get the time, we'll have a chai together rather than discuss all this in the physiotherapy session. So we had a cup of tea and he said one practice which he diligently does, which is mentioned in Islam, is he says, when I step into my home or anyone's home, he mentioned the words and translated it for me. He said, I step in the name of God. What does that mean? Not a God up there, Shiva, Allah. I step in the name of not me as an individual, but as the one being. In that name, I step in. And even harder is to remember that when you step out. I step out in the name of God. Because what tends to happen, if we have a favorite deity in Hinduism, Krishna, Shivji, whoever, we may find that we are in remembrance of the deity all the time. So I'm stepping in and out, Krishna is on my mind, but Krishna is everyone. That is the whole point of stepping in and stepping out in the name of God means that. So can you imagine if my worship is directed to a particular deity, but my relationships are in a mess? So these are the patience. This is the deep dive to unravel this mystery of life and living, so that at the end of my life, I can say, yes, to some degree, I saw through it all, and I carry no resentments to my grave or to my cremation. This is the art of dying. The silence of the thinking mind. When I find my thinking mind is becoming quieter and quieter and quieter, that is the art of dying. I do what I have to do. Try my best. Results never been in my control and I march on. Simple. Life really becomes very simple. Ekdam simple.
I don't get the point you are mentioning. When he steps in, and steps
one sec, that recording, they need the... It is like, I don't know if you all mentioned, if I mentioned this to you all once, there was a politician. I think he must have been a minister at that time and there were riots in the city. So he's being filmed on camera. Behind him, there's arson and fires and all going on. And the interviewer asks him, "Ki situation kaisa hai?" And he replies, "Ekdam peaceful." And all that is going on at the back. That is how it becomes. As Nisargadatta Maharaj said, you stop being interested in it. The mind will do what it does, but you lose interest in it. That is what happens. It's not about controlling the mind and all those very hard tapasyas. It's not about that. Because the focus has shifted, you lose interest in the antics of the thinking mind. That is what happens. The thinking mind is burnt to ash. And then you may find some people can't handle it. They can't handle your peace. They get agitated. It happened to me once. I was in Vancouver in the year 2000. And we had dinner with Eckhart Tolle. And very strangely, a person on the next table started getting agitated. It was bizarre. And as soon as that happened, Eckhart mentioned the ego cannot handle the peace. There was no interaction. There was no conversation. But it happened, and spontaneously he said, then he told us, this happens sometimes, that someone who is looking for a fight and you are not playing the game, that person will get more agitated because there's no pushback. It comes out, it comes up. The flaring up comes up. Sometimes that happens. That is the instinct to survive. The false sense of self, the instinct of the false sense of self to survive. In our own lives, if someone says something to us and immediately we say something back, which is not nice because they said something not nice, we know we are still trapped in this game. The instinct to survive is so strong. But if you try meeting that in silence, which is what the Buddha said when he was being abused by someone on the road, and his disciples said, Master, how could you listen to all this abuse? And he replied, look, if someone gives me a gift and I don't accept it, it stays with the giver. Similarly, if someone abuses me and I don't take delivery of it, it stays with the abuser. Who is carrying the burden then? The one giving it. Because you're not taking it. Or there's another way. As Goldsmith would say, if someone abuses you, within yourself, know that they are abusing God. You have nothing to do with it. Because there is only God. Who is to abuse whom? And you want to rile up that person, tell that person you are abusing God. Isn't it true? Or have I said something which doesn't make sense? Yes, Sunil. I'm talking nonsense.
110% sense, because he's carrying the gift. That's a burden because I didn't take it. He's carrying the abuse because I didn't take it. Leave it to them. If you and the second point you made, I remember your quote. Drop the tennis racket and leave the court. The other guy can't. I see a situation, the tennis racket is dropped, I leave the court. No action reaction. Well, thank you everybody. But play on your own now.
Or find someone else.
Yet, we may find ourselves in certain situations where we have to take what we think is corrective action. For example, someone like Sri Aurobindo was designed to be a freedom fighter. So he had to take appropriate action based on his destiny. Just like Arjuna was designed to be a warrior, but thought he was responsible for the killing until Krishna told him that, what are you doing? When I, as time, have already killed them, you are only the instrument. So depending on our nature, some people are designed a certain way. They will take corrective action, do what they feel is the right thing in a particular situation, but they don't lose their peace of mind when they do that. The ordinary person is disturbed and is doing that in a disturbed state. The master, the sage, does not lose that peace because he knows this is the living dream of life. Appearances that are separate, though all is one. Isn't it like a dream? When I start experiencing this dream-like quality in daily living, then I know a transition has taken place. This living dream of life, which disappears in deep sleep, how real can it be? If this living dream of life disappears in my deep sleep, how real can it be? If it was so real, it would be then deep sleep also. Let's get serious about this. So Ramana Maharshi was quite right. when he said deep sleep is your natural state, because no sense of separation is experienced in deep sleep. If one wakes up with this thought that today I am witnessing the living dream of life, it can transform the quality of the day. Then you don't even have to say, I step in the name of God and I step out in the name of God. That becomes your living experience. There's a very interesting story which Goldsmith narrates about one of his senior most students or disciples or whatever you call them, who tells him that my awareness is so high that when I step out, like I went with my family, we went driving to a town nearby. Whenever I step out, whenever I travel, the first thing is before stepping out, I ask for protection. I ask God for protection. I have never lost awareness during my life. Every moment when I meet people, in full awareness I meet people. But he had an accident. So his question to his master was, how could this happen? And the master replied that your prayer should have been different. Your prayer should have been that God is behind each wheel driving cars on the road, not about protection. That should have been the awareness. It was quite a beautiful exchange which I read. Then satsang becomes living satsang because you're in the company of truth all the time. Your life becomes satsang. My mother once had this experience and she was laughed at in her sangha. She, after their group meditation with their guru, in her, what is the word, naivety or whatever, being naive, in front of everyone, told the guru that, she said, Guruji, I had a very strange experience. Whenever someone was putting a garland on a murti, I felt they were putting it on me. When they were giving, prasad, food, offering it to the deity, I felt they were offering it to me. And they laughed. They said, she's gone mad. The guru didn't laugh. Guru knew that the experience of oneness had happened. We don't understand these things. You are so one with the divine that it's all coming to you. We have to be very careful what we laugh at, whom we laugh at, whom we put down. Put down anyone, you're putting down God. Talking negative about people, especially as in character assassination, one has to be careful. Shirdi Sai Baba said something. He said, even be more careful when you are criticizing masters and gurus, especially if they have a parampara, because then you are risking criticizing the entire parampara. If you don't agree with someone, don't like the way they are behaving, don't agree with what their teachings are, move away from it. Simple. So simple. Would anyone else like to share anything or ask a question?
This thing you said about responding in silence, I was thinking about a situation where, like, spontaneously I felt like setting a boundary. So in that case, wasn't that the right action? Because I could have responded in silence too, but that felt like a little bit more doership, you know? But this was like, okay, I need to set boundaries. This is natural and this is the right response.
How did you feel when setting the boundary?
Not bad. Good. It felt like it had to be done.
That is different. But it all depends what the intention behind setting the boundary was. The
intention was to have peace, right?
Well, that is not the way. How many boundaries will you set?
Exactly. You can't do that with everybody, so.
Setting boundaries in the sense that suppose I know someone is always overstepping and targeting me, let's say, all the time, unnecessarily. Necessary, obviously, from their point of view. Then I have to exercise options. I don't have to keep receiving it, for sure. But I will know deep within that this boundary setting, what is the foundation of the boundary? Am I at peace with this person? Have I accepted this dynamic will not change, no matter how much I've tried? Then by all means, with a peaceful heart and mind, I set a boundary. But if I'm setting that boundary, which is a separation, so that I don't get hurt, then the issue is still not resolved. The minute it is resolved and I set a boundary, I know that that intention of that boundary is not about protecting myself from getting hurt repeatedly, because that has been resolved. Then I can set a boundary. It's very simple. Like, for example, there will always be people you are naturally drawn to, those you're not. We all have preferences. It doesn't mean we have to be equal to everyone. It's not natural that way. So if I'm drawn to quieter people, I like their company. Someone may be drawn to people who talk a lot. Whatever. Everyone is created differently. So I will gravitate towards where I'm drawn. But I accept the other. I accept that the other is an equal creation of God. So in that sense, yes. If I feel that a particular relationship or situation is really not working out, but within myself I have resolved it. I have seen what is behind it, what is behind the person's conditioning, their antics, what they say and all. Yes, I may have to decide to keep away from someone. I take that decision. But when there is no thought of separation and hurt and resentment, when those are not playing, then I know that that boundary has been set as a mechanism, as a device, with no other intention. And I can find myself telling that person that, look, if ever you need me, I'm there. Even that may arise. These issues apart, where we don't get along, where we are unnecessarily troubling each other, whatever, X, Y, Z. But if you feel you're in a situation in the future and you need my assistance, I'm happy to offer it. That's one kind of thought which can arise. Something else may arise.
I meant more like in a simpler context, like say this Buddha's example, right? Like somebody comes and says something. There are two options. You can say, hey, I don't like this. You know, I don't want to be spoken this way, whatever. The second one is no response.
Anything. It yeah. could be any of the two.
But if the first one felt like a more natural response, yes. isn't that the right action?
If you are at peace.
If
your action is not targeted at an individual doing something, then it's fine.
Yeah, because sometimes you can't respond in silence. It feels like you have to.
Perhaps. Nothing wrong with that. But if someone is repeatedly trying to get a certain reaction out of you, even then that is unconscious. And after all, they have nothing to do with it because the reactions are within you. So you see? So when that dies, when that thing dies, then you know for yourself you are at peace. If that has not died and it constantly comes up, it has to be looked at.
Yes, I was wondering if there's a better or worse response.
There's none. In Advaita, there's nothing like that. Whatever arises in the moment is appropriate. That is all. And I may find with one person my reaction is silence, with another person it is not. Anything is possible. Or with the same person, sometimes I'm quiet, sometimes I'm not. Ultimately, it is irrelevant. What is relevant? My peace of mind. And also, am I taking away the other's peace of mind? That also I have to look at. If I find the answers to these two questions are no. My peace is not disturbed, and I'm pretty clear I have not disturbed the other's peace. The way they take that boundary is their destiny, but you have not intentionally done that. Then you are at peace. Then there's no problem. After all, who would want to be badgered day after day after day after day if there is a relationship like that going on? Then you have to exercise your options. Do I have options firstly? If so, what are they? A, B, C. And I decide to do that which I think and feel I should do, knowing that nobody is the doer of their actions. Neither the other nor myself. It's very simple. If one country is repeatedly invading another country because there are no boundaries, the country being invaded, if it has it within itself, it will set up a boundary. Why would it keep wanting to be invaded? If it is being invaded and plundered all the time, a decision will be taken that this no boundary concept is not working. So let me put a boundary. But it is seen in a very clear light, you see. That is the only difference. The clear light of the teaching shines. That is what happens.
In that situation, that boundary is creating peace for you and the other.
Other may get more agitated and will want to destroy the boundary. It may not.
It may not.
But all you can do is try. All you can do is try.
Gautam, with the last 18 months with you and your teaching and becoming a very silent person, a lot of changes in 18 months, a lot of changes, I can assure you. I knew I was an egoistic person and I had whatever negative qualities. Now, like I would indulge earlier in religious divide talks, news channels and go on groups and all these things. Now the transition I found in 18 months is, which is healthy, I guess, if I'm sitting in the same group now, at the club or something, and this religious divide nonsense goes on, or some article out of some news channel, hot topic or trending, I actually get up and walk away. I just get up. In continuation to your point. I'm in a space where religion, religious divide, Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Hamas has no, I have no place for that in the space I'm in. Palestine, I don't watch news channels. You know what I do now? Honestly, you'll remember this. There were two very good serials which come on Netflix still. Jerry Seinfeld and Friends. I watch Jerry Seinfeld, all episodes, the fourth time I'm watching it. Friends I've seen 3 times in the past 8 months. And there are 40, 50 episodes.
Many people do this.
And I laugh in the night and I sleep so well.
You know, I'll tell you, there are some people who are very sensitive. They can't watch horror movies. They can't take negative news. Rapes and, dacoity and all, it disturbs their consciousness.
Yeah, I flip through this rape, this ED raid, that. Throw it out of my phone. Yeah. I'm now keeping it silent in your talks. I keep it silent for 5 hours in my house.
That is beautiful.
I don't want any ting tong. This guy, I'm at that and this.
Really, even that ting tong is a disturbance.
Bish, it's a pure. You don't be a slave to the phone.
So I have a school friend. We used to go and watch many movies together, and we had this thrill of watching horror movies. Because you know how it excites you and all that stuff. I'm going back when I was 16, 17, 18. Then when my teacher was around, we saw a movie, what I thought was a brilliant movie. But we went with a very close friend of mine, Mary was with us, Irish Mary. And we came out of the cinema and my friend and me were saying what a great movie it was. It was a movie called Blood Diamond. Yeah, exactly.
Leonardo.
But she was very disturbed. And she said, how could you bring me to such a movie? And we were making fun and jokes, oh, it was so good. She said, it was so violent. We didn't feel this import of her feelings. Her consciousness was truly disturbed. Then later I realized that everyone is so different. And I apologized to her. First we laughed, ha ha ha, Mary, how can you be so sensitive and all that. But then I said, and I didn't find it that violent. I said, what if we actually went to a violent movie? So, yes, it does disturb the consciousness. And that is the way news is designed. It is fear-based. News, serials, are all mostly fear-based, very few are uplifting.
Just like the imagination is always fear-based future. It focuses on fear-based future, thinking mind. But the query I had here was, Gautam, do I run the risk? This is something that I've noticed I've got up from so many conversations, disputes, racial disputes, throwing the tennis racket and just walking out and going to the loo and disappearing from the club. Will I get estranged?
Could be.
Thank you.
Could be. So?
So that's what I'm asking you.
See, as long as you are not telling them I'm disgusted by this conversation and I'm leaving.
I don't.
Your interest is not there. Thank you. I have another engagement with whom are you seeing who's more important than us? Even that happens. Yeah, I have a meeting with God.
I'll buy a house in Shirdi.
But this is what really happens with many people on the spiritual path. They find themselves getting estranged. I have faced it. I stopped going somewhere I used to go often because the conversation was all this. It didn't interest me beyond a point. I may have a view on the Israel-Hamas war. I may have a view on Russia-Ukraine, but it ends there. It doesn't become my identity, which I'm trying to thrust on others and trying to defend. I know there'll always be different views. So what's the big deal? Very often this happens. Because you see, everything is a vibration. And now your vibration is no longer vibrating at that frequency. Earlier it used to. Now it doesn't interest you.
It was very, very enlightening. I just wanted to make two comments. Mahmood, Khairaz, come thanks to Hamza. No, he didn't actually. He didn't. He suggested it to me, and I, because you know the world is very strange. I mean, we really don't understand it very much. And from your talk, I wanted to make two observations or points, which you may further enlighten on. So you know, one is our entire birth. If you know, there is a very nice book called The Selfish Gene by a scientist called Richard Dawkins. And, each of us fought at the time of birth because there were millions of spermatozoa. And the spermatozoa fought to give birth to you. And we actually destroyed other sperms to get birth. And, because of that, and that's the animal nature. We say we are human beings, but we are actually animals and we have our animal instinct. And really what, has come very clearly today is that we have to be conscious about it. So when we talk about conflict or when we talk about things that, are not very pleasant and affect us, we have to, I believe, build that quality within ourselves. Because as animals, we like to dominate, we want to be in control, and of course, survival. A lot of it is survival, it's the survival instinct. So we must, and it happens to me all the time, and sometimes you lose consciousness of you're briefly conscious in your life, because you can't maintain that consciousness for a long period of time, unless you have disciplined your mind. So that's one thing which I think you brought out very well. The other thing is very, very interesting, and a lot of it comes from what you said in terms of spirituality and the thought process. And here I go to one of the smartest minds of the last three decades, which is Albert Einstein, right? And for those who know a little bit of science, Albert Einstein, of course, revolutionized the world at a young age. He was just a little patent lawyer sitting there, and he got almost as if the wisdom came to him, right? And he could see things which no other scientist could see. And so he came out with, of course, relativity, right? Which changed the world, and lots of things that happen today thanks to relativity. But as he went on in life, the quantum field came in. So scientists were able to go into the atoms, right? So Einstein was in the world of physicality. He could see things and he could explain things to you. So here you had the scientist going into the world of quantum mechanics and the quantum field. And it was completely different to the physical world, right? And what it means, very simply is that in the quantum world, if you observed something, you could never know where the particle was. It was uncertain. So you could not say that the particle is here and it is moving at this speed. Only when you observed it, was it real. And Einstein could never accept this, right? Until today, it has never been disproven, right? So his point was very simply, you know, I, to make it very simple to you, if you had a box in the quantum world with a cat and you observed it and it observed that it was dead all along, but it was not dead till you observed it, you know? So it's something similar to what we need to understand. And you know, from there, Einstein, he was a very deeply religious man, but he didn't, you know, his God was science. He says, God doesn't play dice, right? It has, you know, God is so elegant that everything is very well systematically laid out. And, you know, this comes to a little bit of your point, which is which was the story you said about, you know, the person who got an accident. And his thing was, keep me safe when I go out. And obviously, the complete difference is that let every driver be God. Yes. You're right. So, because then every driver will do what he has to do. So, you know, very, very interesting. I just wanted to make these two a little bit different, you know, points from a scientific sort of view, because that is a lot how I think. And but it is not very different.
It is not.
To what?
In fact, my teacher would say that Einstein, when he got the equation E equals mc square and was asked, how did you come up with this? His answer was, I don't know if it is right, but this is what my teacher would say, it came to me from outside.
Yes, yes, absolutely. He was a deeply religious man.
It came to me from outside. It came to me, not mine.
Yeah.
It came to me from outside.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Riding by what your talk was and what Mahmud said, in the ancient scriptures, this concept of things happening, in the universe is everything is happening, everything is designed. Neither our birth nor our death we have any control over. So the in between these two bridges, there's no control on anything except our sense of observation and a sense of acceptance and how we react to those events. The events are happening. So in the Vedas, it is yatha pinde tatha brahmande. What is there in a particle is there in the universe, in the atom. So we are so connected. It's like it's the concept of universal connectivity. So in Isha Upanishads, it talks about the same observation Einstein made. That God particle is sarvagya and svayambhu tattva. The svayambhu tattva is, it's complete. You can't take anything out of it. Neither you can add to it, neither you can subtract from it. And Svayambhu is, and Sarvagya is, it's all knowing. It knows everything. So the quanta, the concept of quanta was, it's neither this nor that. Where there's a kind of conflict. Whether it's a molecule or atom. So quanta is, it could be, maybe. The whole concept of maybe. So your point that, you know, everyone has a point of view. So if I say, I'm a right winger, for instance, and somebody's a left winger. So I'm sitting, it's like a fan, like a steeple fan. I'm sitting in front, I'm seeing it going clockwise. But you're sitting behind it, you're seeing it anti-clockwise. So you are right, I'm right. So we have...
Excellent. Hamza gives talks on the Upanishads, right? And what else? Ashtavakra Gita. We would love to hear you speak, Hamza. Maybe once you can, we can announce. But there are two things here. One is, not directly related in a lateral way, that when we realize, forget just birth and death, when we realize that we are here, our heart is pumping without any will of ours, blood is coursing through the veins, we are here because of gravity, otherwise we'd be flying off. The earth is rotating on its axis and revolving around the sun. It's so humbling that how much is in your control? How much is really, and here you're trying to micromanage and control each minute of your life. That is the Maya. And as you rightly said, if you're a right winger, you've created the polaric opposite. That is why the Buddha's middle path is so beautiful. Because, you know, then you're not blindsided. You take a bit of good from here, bit of good from here. Don't be polarized and live your life in sukha shanti. Normally when you are polarized, you are not at peace. So this is the game of duality and seeing that my pendulum, if it is polarized and held at one end, if it is left, it's bound to swing. So rather equilibrium. And like Siddharameshwar Maharaj said, that your birth itself is so traumatic. For 9 months you are stewing in a dark place without any control over it, and then you come popped out. Birth itself is so traumatic, you know. So we have to understand all these things. And as Maharaj was at the, I think towards the end of his life, Nisargadatta Maharaj was asked that, you know, how do you feel now, you know, amongst all what you've done, all this duality? He said, now I'm even tired of sleeping and waking up. Even those two polarities are tiring. I'd rather rest in my natural state.
Saying that the river never drowns a dead man, because it's a struggle which drowns you. So when you're in the if you're in a lake and you can't swim, it's you start struggling and it's that drowns you. But once a dead man, the body always comes up. So it's our struggle against duality, against so many things, fear, that makes us drown. So there was a story in Ramakrishna Paramahansa, you know, when he was a theist. He believed, was a strong believer, and he was confronted with a lawyer. And all lawyers are argumentative, as you know. So he, Keshav Chandra, if I'm not mistaken, I've got the name right. And he gave him a very long explanation as to why God doesn't exist. And very eloquent. So Ramakrishna Paramahansa, instead of getting agitated or disturbed, because he was attacking his core values, he gets up, he starts smiling, and he goes and hugs Keshav Chandra and says, what a fantastic talk. Now I know God exists because he has given you this intelligence.
I'll tell you something which I think the regulars here, you obviously will remember. In my teacher's satsang, a lawyer used to come. Lovely chap, but not everyone's cup of tea. God bless his soul, he's not here anymore. But he would wait till the 1 minute of satsang was left, you know, and then he would start. And invariably this would happen. And he would love arguing as if he was standing in court and arguing a case. So whatever my teacher would say, he would say, but sir, but sir, but sir. So then Rameshji would say, you know, Rohit, you have the last word. And the lawyer would reply saying, sir, excuse me, but you telling me you have the last word means you have had the last word. Lawyer will be a lawyer. Isn't it? I'm seeing you after years.
Yes, I have.
He used to come for satsang with our teacher. Yeah.
Yes, pranams, Gautam. 2 years ago, my wife and I moved to Toronto. Yes, so this is my first trip back to India. And she's doing very well. Thank you. Yes. Yes.
Anything to share?
Nothing is coming up in this moment, but your, you know, sharing of the art of dying is something I feel that in certain moments of my life I sense that the thinking mind has quietened down. In other moments I find it has come much more strongly in a particular situation. So there is this desire that the thinking mind sort of subsides once and for all, and that dying happens, it's complete. And so that's what it is.
It's a beautiful wish to have. And you are a doctor, right?
Yes. I studied as a physiotherapist, then I did a PhD. So now I work on environment and health policy.
Enjoying your work.
Enjoying my
work. That's the main thing. I enjoy it today a lot. Thank you for the very enlightening discussion.